You're listening to Momentum, a show that helps men succeed in life.
There is something special about the daddy and daughter relationship. That's what they want. You need to be, you know, the type of man that you want your daughter to marry. And if you keep that in that filter, and are you the type of one? So the best thing you can do for your kids is to love their mum.
Now, here's your hosts, Tim and Des.
All right, well, welcome to this week's Momentum. Once again, it is Tim and Des with you, and wherever you might be tuning in all around Australia, really great to have your company, and thanks so much for joining us on this week's show. MomentumAustralia.org, our website. Love you to, when you get a moment, have a squeeze around there, find out a bit more about what we're about, maybe throw some money our way and financially support us. We do run very lean here at Momentum, but I'll tell you what, we love doing what we're doing and impacting men all around Australia through this ministry, and of course all the radio stations who support us too. So big thanks to them for taking the show. It is not just me though, of course. Des, how are you this week? Are you well?
Yes, I'm really well. It's really good to be here. And don't forget, guys, don't forget our care line, 1-800-000-MEN. It's available 7 days a week from 9 o'clock to 11 p.m., 1-800-000-636. And it's really about if you're on your own and you're struggling with issues and you need somebody to talk to confidentially, somebody you can trust, the care line is exactly that. It's available on all those hours, and there's always somebody at the end of the line that you can talk to confidentially. So it's so key to all of us.
Yeah, 1-800-000-636. Well, you know, we love our kids, but there is something about a daddy-daughter relationship that can be extra special.
As dads, we are the first man that she loved and has loved her in return. And the way that we love our daughters can have a huge effect on who they choose to love them as a partner.
So when your daughter starts reaching the age where she's thinking about starting to date or has started dating, what should she be looking for? And as dads, when we meet this young man, what sorts of questions can we lovingly ask to help see if this is a safe and healthy relationship that has the potential to blossom into a God-ordained marriage?
The CEO of Focus on the Family Australia, Brett Rand, joined us once again to look at 12 questions every father should ask his future son-in-law. Welcome back to Momentum.
It's a pleasure being with you.
I don't have too many questions because I don't have a daughter.
Yeah, well, I've got three sons, but we had the same conversations with our sons that I would give the same questions, whether it's your daughter or whether it's your son. Yeah. The principles do apply. But as you said in the opening remark, Tim, you know, there is something special about the daddy and daughter relationship, and that's the ideal. That's what they want. You need to be, you know, the type of man that you want your daughter to marry.
Yes.
And if you keep that in that filter, and are you the type of one? So the best thing you can do for your kids is to love their mum.
Yes, yeah. That's exactly right.
So interesting, before we launch into the article, the guy who wrote this, Greg, was talking about three critical conversations that we need to have. And these are with the daughter or son, the respective parents, I suppose, and see if they're on board. And what are your thoughts about that? I mean, having those sorts of conversations even before we broach this to kind of get a feel of the bigger picture to make sure that everybody's kind of on the same page here.
Once the heart's engaged, the brain disengages.
Isn't that the truth?
And they're in love and they're in that sort of fog of endorphins and oxytocin and, you know, in euphoria. And often they can actually miss things because their heart's well and truly engaged and they're oblivious to things. So asking them personally about different aspects of the relationship, and you want to have as many people having not input to control, but actually, what do you see about this situation? What are the things that you could red flag? And including them in that conversation. In fact, the challenge from a dad's point of view is, you know, you may not have as close a relationship as the mother, as, you know, as a general rule. Sometimes there is a difference in that. But at the same time, you know, if mum really likes the guy, then you need to have your filters and say, well, what are some things? Or maybe including how does he relate to his in-laws? His parents. Then potential future in-laws. There's a lot of things you can actually discern externally, but also getting other friends and people, colleagues and peers to actually find out, you know, are we all in this together? You know, have we got everyone ticking all the boxes? And that takes time. And, you know, I spoke to someone just recently, and they got married very, very quickly. And then it's hit a proverbial fan afterwards. And I said, did anyone, you know, highlight some of these concerns? They said, oh, yes, they did, but we are in love. And they didn't allow the privilege of people speaking into their lives. Mm. So you don't want to rush into things, because it should be the ideal, a lifetime. And so there's no rush to make these decisions. And so we need to actually try and get mom, dad, future in-laws, and also the person who's going to marry them. Why? You know, what's the reason why? Why do you want to do this? What's the important thing? And then when you get all those in alignment, then you can actually have a bit more courageous conversations with your potential son-in-law. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Well, let's start off at looking at these 12 questions. The first is, are you united spiritually? And, you know, I suppose that would indicate that there are two people of faith coming together. But as we know, I mean, that's not always the case. Sometimes somebody can want to be in a relationship with somebody who doesn't share the same faith or have any faith, and then things can get a little tricky.
Yes, and this is a big one. It can be a bit controversial because, you know, we talk about unequally yoked, and that's a very common thing that, you know, is one a Christian, not a Christian? And I often would refer to the person, is faith really important to you? And if they say yes, I said, then I wouldn't be marrying someone who doesn't have that same faith, because there's more than the marriage just to, I like the person or I love the person and he finishes my sentences or as in Frozen, he finishes my sandwiches. many of them might understand that. But, you know, there's more to it. And if faith is really important to you, you want to be able to share that with your lifelong partner. You want to be able to discern and pray together and serve together. And so I would often say, and again, for every 1% or 2% of stories that I hear that, they became to faith as a result, we talk about, you know, flirt to convert or missionary dating, those type of things. And then, yes, they would make a wonderful Christian. And that's what we want for everyone. But I would not try and tangle your relationship with them, with their potential relationship with the Heavenly Father. And they need to own God for themselves and then come together. And unfortunately, some people will say, well, you know, my auntie or my uncle became a Christian as a result. And I said, for every one of those great stories, and I commend that story, I can tell you a whole bunch of other stories that aren't so flattering. And so I would say, if they're not of someone who has the same value, same belief, and same heart for God, then I would say it's a red flag. And almost, I would say, it's a deal breaker.
Yeah, I actually had coffee this week with a guy who was a very strong pastor in New South Wales. And we had coffee together, and he talked about his marriage and, you know, the fact that he remarried to somebody who wasn't Christian, wasn't a faith. And it's affecting him every single day. And it's, I mean, it's such a tough place to be.
I would rather say to my son or daughter, and particularly in this situation, the daughter, is it's better to have short-term pain now rather than long-term pain later on. Even though it's a heart aspect. And I was speaking to a pastor, a friend of mine, and he said his daughter who got married, and it ended up being in a divorce. It was a very heartbreaking situation. And she referred to him, and he did have some concerns, but he didn't share it. He thought better to back off because she was in love. And she said to him, if you had said to me not to marry him, I would have followed. I may have not liked you, but I would have, and it would have saved me a lot of heartbreak. So if you've got some concerns, have the brave and much needed conversations. Now, if they go ahead with it, you're going to have to learn to, you know, form a relationship with them and support them and encourage them, whatever you may do. But until they've got the ring on their finger, you know, you can share, but don't badger them, because at the end of the day, they're adults and they're going to make their own decisions and have to face the consequences of those decisions.
Yeah. Number two is fairly straightforward, but I mean, it's such a good question to ask. Are you ready to make a lifelong commitment? Because let's be honest, we can like the idea of, always having somebody. And, you know, like you said, the romanticized version of it. But when you put the reality of, hey, it's life, but it's lifelong, you realize you're looking at this lifelong thing. Are you really ready for that? That's a great question.
Yeah, I mean, it's not just a little fling. It's meant to be lifelong. And let's face it, a lot of us like, and depending on if they've been single for a while, they're pretty set in their ways. They like their independence. They like doing things of their own. But now you're going to have someone who's going to have a front row seat of all your flaws. they're also going to be able to see a different aspect of you, because let's face it, we're on our best behavior when we start the dating journey. And then when we get married, we think, well, we've got married, you know, I've got my prize. But we have to know that we are all in it. You know, when we talk about for better or for worse, for richer and poorer, in sickness and health, till death do us part, that's a commitment. And ideally, it's not just a commitment and it's not just a contract. It's a covenant. It's actually saying before family and friends and before God, I am going to make this for all the ups and downs we're going to face. I am fully committed to supporting you and seeing you be the very best version of yourself.
That's so good. It's about your partner, not about yourself. And also, I mean, children come along in the marriage, and that's a commitment that you're making for your life anyway. Whether you're married to that person or not, you have that relationship and you have that focus forever. Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah.
Number three kind of bounces off that. What do you see in this person that makes you want to marry them? And, you know, that's a really interesting question, because rather than just it being, oh, but what they do for me, what do you like about them? What attracts you to them?
And if it's all very superficial, you know, because they're very pretty, and they've got a big bank account, they're pretty superficial things. But you want to know why that love is there, and not be very superficial. But actually, it's sort of like my life is richer because of this. And I want to add to her, not subtract. I don't want to take things away. I want to build her up. And that's the reason why I love her. And not have, well, she's got good potential, or the good bones, and I can build upon. If you're in the business to thinking that you can change them, then I would say that is not a healthy way of looking. You have to love them for who they are, and what's drawing to their innermost person. What is their character like? What is the thing you're passionate about, and their zeal? And if anyone's seen the movie, Father of the Bride, would be able to relate to this.
Yeah.
And there's a scene there about why you want to marry her, and all those things. And we watched that movie with all of our three sons who got married, and it still is applicable. Not even if it's not just a daughter, but it's also for our sons.
That's true.
Yeah, it's good.
The fourth one is an interesting one. It is that do you agree on your core values and your dreams? Not only are you your core values now, but your dreams of the future, they have to be aligned.
Yeah, and that was coming back to that first one about, you know, being spiritually aligned and being equally yoked is the ideal. Is that, do you have the same passions? Do you have the same future together? You know, like, you, for example, you know, what do you want to do? Do you want to serve together, you know, on the mission field, or do you want to serve together in the church? What do you want to do to achieve, and you know, your family dynamics? You know, are you going to be aligned with how you manage finances? Are you going to live a generous lifestyle? And if there's a disconnect, then that will only become bigger later on when you're married.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned finances there, Brett. Number five is, how do you plan to, if it's a man to a daughter, financially support my daughter? How do you plan to do that? And of course, I mean, finances can be one of the biggest things that couples disagree on, right? One's a spender, one's a saver. We have different ideas around what's important. And, you know, I mean, there can be some big rifts around the financial area.
The finances in relationships, the number one reason why relationships disintegrate. It's well and truly proven. So get on the same page there is vitally important. But you want to be able to, if you're releasing your daughter into the care of another man, you want to know that they can be provided for and not scrape and, you know, and get by. You want to see them succeed. Now, having a big bank account is not the deal breaker, but have they got a good work ethic? Are they do whatever it takes? Because we know that this, you know, the financial situation could be very fluctuant. You could have a really good job today and tomorrow you could be made redundant. But have you got the determination to see it through and to support them. And I think it's vitally important is if they can't manage their finances as an individual by themselves, having another person is not going to make it any easier. So they need to be able to manage their own finances before they marry into a relationship.
Well, almost halfway through our 12 questions every father should ask his future son-in-law, or just every parent should ask someone who's wanting to come into their family in marriage. And question number six, which we're going to come back to on the other side of this break, is a really, really interesting one. I would not have thought to put this on the list. I'm going to tease that as we go to a break and encourage you to tune in on the other side with our special guest, Brett Ryan from Focus on the Family Australia. In the meantime, have a look around their website, families.org.au, and our website, MomentumAustralia.org. And we'll be back with Brett in just a moment.
This is Momentum, a show that helps men succeed in life. Find out more at MomentumAustralia.org.
All right, well, welcome back to this week's show. It is Tim and Des with you once again, and our special guest is Brett Ryan, the CEO of Focus on the Family Australia, the website families.org.au. MomentumAustralia.org, of course, is our website, and 1-800-000-636 for the KLI. More details on the website. But we're talking this week on questions, and 12 of them. Every parent should ask their future in-laws, or every father should ask his future son-in-law. And as I teased before the break, Brett and Des, number six, and we just had a bit of a joke about this off air, but would you marry you? Now, that's a pretty confronting question for anybody, let's be honest.
Yeah, I often ask that question when I'm counseling a couple who are in crisis, because I often can point the finger at someone else and say it's all their fault. But I would often say, how are you contributing to this relationship? What are you doing? And are you being the best version of yourself? And if you had a time again, if you could imagine if you were flipping the whole script and you were married to you, would you like to be married to you? And so that's the reason why I'd ask that, are they the best version of themselves? Have they got baggage? Have they got issues that they need to deal with? You know, if they've got and we've spoken about it in another podcast about the, pornography. If they had an issue as a teenager going into young adulthood and they haven't dealt with that, it's not going to go away later on. So we need to get there. If they've got other addictive behaviors like alcohol or drugs, or if they can't manage their finances, or they can't keep down a job, those are the type of things. And it's not necessarily each one of them is a deal breaker, but if they accumulate, are you someone that you would like to be married to? Are you the best version of yourself? If you can say, yes, I am the best version of myself, we can always grow, we can always develop. But if we've got some issues, I don't think it's fair for the other person. If you really love them, if you haven't dealt with your issues, then it's probably not a good idea to enter into a marital relationship.
And it's interesting, isn't it, that in today's society, where there's a lot of marriages and relationships that are the second time or the third time around, you know, there may be children involved from a previous relationship, or, you know, you may be struggling with that entanglement with, you know, somebody you were dating in the past and so forth. All those things come into play in this discussion, don't they?
Yeah, we all have baggage, and we can't pretend that we've got, you know, a perfect clean slate, but we have to deal with those things. And we often talk about family of origin. There's things that actually have happened to us in our childhood or our experiences growing up, and sometimes our own choices, sometimes the choices of others, or just simply circumstances. So we need to actually work through those things. And we obviously all could do with more improvement. You know, we're all a work in progress. But we need to make sure that we are actively seeking, and maybe either professional help or mentors or people can speak into your life that actually can have the right to speak into your blind spots. And that shouldn't be your future spouse to do all of that. We need others to be able to do that as well.
Yeah, so good. And we should clarify again that, and it says in the notes here, you're not looking for perfection. That's true. But you certainly want somebody who is self-aware and able to go, look, I am the best version of myself to this point, but I haven't just put a stake in the ground and gone, this is it. This is me for the rest, for the next 40 years.
That's right.
I am open to change, improvement, for you to actually speak into my life. And to be honest, how do I handle that? Particularly as a man, to have my wife speak into my life, can I take that? You know, because a lot of guys would push back on that rather than going, you know what? she might actually be right.
Well, our spouse has a front row seat, and they can be our number one critic.
Yeah.
And they can also be our number one cheerleader. And we want them to cheer us on, but they also have to, if you only want affirmation and no criticism or constructive comments, then, you know, your whole world, you know, I mean, a lot of times men will say, well, I'm God's gift. Yes, you are God's gift. We're all a gift from God, but not necessarily the gift that maybe is the best.
The gift that you keep the receipt for just in case. But that's another story. Number seven, what do you like about your relationship with this person, which I think is fairly obvious. But number eight, which I think is really important, do you have meaningful communication? I mean, let's be honest. This is the rubber hitting the road. This is, again, where a lot of marriages can come unstuck.
Yeah, very much so. In fact, we've actually got on our video a two-part series called Caring, Communication, and Conflict on how to have these conversations, because a healthy relationship's not the absence of conflict. It's actually how we resolve conflict. Yes. So number eight and number nine go hand in hand. We need to be able to communicate, like they say in real estate. It's, you know, location. Yes. How to communicate and not be superficial, but actually have those deep and meaningful ones, because we can get very many administratively, but we have to actually get into the deep and meaningful, so that we can actually have those brave and courageous and much needed conversations, and not to be defensive, but actually be able to actually manage when we have difference of opinion. We are two human beings. No one's going to agree with everything. And whenever two or more people are in a room, you're all going to have different of opinions. And so how we manage conflict and how we're going to do that. Now, obviously I said before, you know, we're on our best behavior. We never fight. We never argue. We do everything together. But there's going to be a time, and if you haven't been role modeled healthy conflict resolution, you might get married and have your first intense fellowship moment, and then you go, I've married the wrong person, but, you know, because I haven't been role modeled. So, you know, if dads are listening to this, you know, if you have conflict with your spouse, you know, in front of the kids, you need to resolve it. But I've heard time and time again that, you know, kids, young people who've just got married, who've never seen their parents argue, they've hidden that for whatever reason. And it's not been healthy, because just not the absence of conflict doesn't mean a healthy relationship.
No, that's exactly right. And, you know, and guys, I guess, over time are conditioned to walk away from a fight with their partner. It needs a change of mindset and attitude to confront things in the right way.
And it's something that you can learn. As I said, we've got that video platform and some strategies, what to assist, what to avoid. And if you haven't had that opportunity to learn those things, you can please contact us and we'll send you in the right direction to be able to help you manage conflict and communicate in a way that is not diminishing or demanding or invalidating somebody else's experiences or their viewpoint. We need to be open. Because we may have our own blind spots, and that's what our spouse has to do. So how they manage conflict and communication in the early years, you know, and the dating years and the dating months will help them prepare for the realities when, you know, basically when finances become tight, when children come onto the scene, when they have to change jobs or lose a job or looking after older parents, they need to be able to have these conversations and manage that well.
With regards to the deeper stuff, and let's be honest, a lot of guys, we can struggle with this, you know, with our partners, and they want to sit in this space that's perhaps emotional and deeper than we would like to normally sit. And a lot of guys would struggle with that. Do you have any suggestions generically for guys about how do we approach that when perhaps we just don't feel like it? Or we want to honor our wife and try and sit in that space, but it's just not comfortable for us, or we're just not sure what to say, or don't feel in touch with that part of my life. Any thoughts around that for guys?
Well, we can't live in isolation, and we are relational beings, and we do that in different ways, and especially the way that we were brought up, the way that we observed our dad and how they communicated. We either make a potential decision to say, you know, we're going to be the opposite of our dad, the pendulum can swing the other way, or we can, you know, go along the principles, the things that we liked, and then we can throw out the things we disliked. But when we go into a relationship, we need to be honest. We need to be vulnerable. We need to be genuine and real and authentic with our spouse. And that means, and it may be a bit out of our comfort zone, but I would be having regular conversations with our spouse on a daily basis. I mean, it doesn't have to be deep and meaningful each time, but actually seeing, how was your day? What's been going on? We call it couch time. Just having that that connection point on a daily basis, finding out what's going on, and then you maybe make it more comfortable to talk about things. And then you can actually go a little bit further and say, well, so what are your hopes and what are your dreams? And the more frequently you do those things, the more comfortable it was, and it won't be so foreign. And your kids are going to watch, because you don't want to be an iceberg, and or you don't want to be a porcupine either. You don't want to be a turtle when, you know, hard shell and soft in the middle. We want to be able to have these conversations. So it starts with maybe a little bit out of your comfort zone, but just because it's not comfortable doesn't mean we shouldn't have it.
Yeah, that's good.
Okay. And again, as Brett alluded to, there are things that will help you on the Focus on the Family website. That's families.org.au. Number 10, do you and my daughter, in this case, agree on biblical roles and responsibilities? I mean, that is, you know, that's an interesting one. And that, again, can cause conflict. And I think some of that has come with perhaps interesting teaching that's come out of the church, perhaps around this sort of thing. What are your thoughts on that? And the husband being the leader of the family, so to speak.
Yeah, and maybe there'll be people who are going to send you harsh emails. So I apologize in advance. But in summary, there is a hierarchy of a household, and does in a biblical model that the man is the leader, but the leader or the head of the household doesn't mean that dominates, doesn't mean that yours is the final say. It's a leader is a servant. And a leader is one that actually lays down his own life, and one who is willing to sacrifice. That's what a leader is. Mm. It doesn't mean I lead with an iron fist. In fact, a lot of people, men, love that card where it says, "Women submit, wives submit to your husbands." But forget there's a verse prior to that where it says, "Submit one to another out of reverence for Christ." So for those of faith, it means that I submit to Kate, my wife, and she submits to me. But my wife also refers to it, you know, like, I don't want to have that final decision anyway. You know, I'm glad you've got it. Jesus had to submit to the Father. And if it was good enough for Jesus to submit to the Father, then why can't we, as Kate says, she goes, I can submit to God and I can submit to you. But we do it together. Every decision that we ever make, we do it together. And there's been very, very few times where I've had to say, you know, we're at an impasse. And then Kate is happy for me to be deflected, to have the final say, and will support that decision. But we do it collaboratively. And, you know, God in his infinite wisdom, you know, saw that, you know, being alone wasn't good, but he actually sent a helpmeet, someone to complement us, not to complete us, to complement us. Mm. And so we need to understand there is that balance. And allowing the man to lead the household, but it's that mutual submission that I think is really vitally important. But we do it with love and compassion and understanding and empathy and all the things that actually say, you know, I want to submit to you because you are someone who doesn't treat me as a second-class citizen. You see me, you validate me, you value my opinion. You're someone I want to follow. You're someone I want to submit to. And then you can do life together.
Yeah, the next one's really cool too, because it says, have you had a range of experiences together? And it's okay, isn't it? Because you really get to know your partner when you have those experiences with them.
Yeah, I mean, I look at our lives. You know, Kate and I have been married for over 33 years now. And in that time, we've had our ups and downs, and we can look back at our experiences and say, hey, God got us through that. He means he can get through this. And even in the dating game, we're going to have highs and lows. How did we manage when we had that first fight? How did we manage when we were disagreeing? How did we manage that? And those things help shape us and give us our what I would say, spiritual muscles. Did we lean to God, or did we do it in our own strength? Did we do it in our own effort, or did we ask for God's wisdom? And those experiences will set you up for, you know, those little things that will come upon you, both big and small. And so, you know, if you've had a death, how did you manage that in the family? How did you manage that grief? How did you manage when, you know, there was a loss of a job? How did you manage when there was a tension with your fighting with your parents, or your parents divorced? How did we manage that? And we were there for you. And together we actually became stronger and healthier as we worked through and navigated those good and the not so bad and the not so good experiences.
Yeah. The final one is simply, are there any relational red flags? And, you know, I guess we talked about that before, Brett, to some degree, but this is where it is really important, I think, to have other people than ourselves or the people at the center of this relationship speaking to the relationship, because let's be honest, as you said, we can be blind in love and we can certainly be blind to our own blind spots, which is why it's really good to have other people speaking into this space. What do they see?
Well, Kate and I actually were doing some what I call pre-engagement counseling. So this is a couple that hadn't been engaged, but they'd actually booked the photographer. They'd actually booked the reception center, but they hadn't even asked a question. And they asked us, they were former students of Kate, and we don't normally do this, but it was like we felt like it was a possibility that we'd provide some time for them. And I kept on asking, you know, are there any emotional flags? You know, like if you see red flags, now, better to, you know, make decisions rather than later on. And Kate says at the end of it, she goes, I can't believe how many times you said about red flags. I said, oh, there was something about it. There was something that I couldn't put my finger on. The second meeting we had, I kept on saying, if you've got any concerns. And I also talked about, you know, knowing what you want, what are your non-negotiables? And one of them was that the other person told the truth. They didn't lie. And then 2 weeks later, we found out that he had been consistently lying to her, and that broke up the relationship. And I could just see the penny drop. Now, she was mad at us, and she was mad at God. She was mad at, you know, everyone else, and then realized that she actually dodged a bullet. She actually, in the reality, out of the fog, she actually identified. She goes, I just was not seeing it. And now in the cool light of day, I actually see how he was being manipulating me and how he was, lying to me. But when we got the fog of love, and I have to say a bit of lust as well. You know, we're in that state. We don't see it. And that's the reason why we need other people who have earned the right to speak in our lives, who can discern and speak into truth in love. And maybe, and it turned out that she asked her friends after they broke up and they said, oh, thank goodness, because they saw it but didn't say anything because they saw her in love and they wanted the best for her. So I would encourage people, you know, have some safe people that you trust who have earned that right and, you know, at least listen to what they have to say. If they have concerns, it may not be absolutely accurate, but at least just allow them for them to speak into your life and then have your radar a little bit more astute.
Yeah, that's good. Good advice to end on.
Yeah.
For this week's show, 12 questions every father or parent should ask their future in-laws coming into the family. Once again, our special guest has been the CEO of Focus on the Family Australia, Brett Ryan. Brett, there's always so much that you impart, and there was a lot in that. Again, I'd get people to go back and listen to the show at momentumaustralia.org. And of course, for resources, check out the family's website, which is families.org.au. That's Focus on the Family Australia, families.org.au. And Brett, really appreciate it, mate. Des and Brett, it's been a great chat. Thanks for your time.
You're more than welcome.
You've been listening to Momentum, a show that helps men succeed in life. For more information or to hear this week's show again, go to MomentumAustralia.org. You can also access a whole range of resources to help you on your journey and to get in touch with the team at MomentumAustralia.org. Until next time, keep moving forward with Momentum.